Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We welcome in now Saints head coach Sean Payton. And, Coach, I need some advice in dealing with aging quarterbacks. Obviously, Drew Brees coming back, but my quarterback, Bobby Hebert, is ailing still from a Mardi Gras parade he participated in on Saturday, still on anti-inflammatories, et cetera. You're doing a much better job managing your quarterback than I am mine.
Well, I think it's safe to say their lifestyles are entirely opposite.
That speaks volumes right there. That point Coach Payton just made just says it all. Coach, I'm like saying the parade was Saturday. My left knee's still hurting. I might have to get a drain. I threw a bunch of footballs. My right shoulder's hurting. You know, I'm having a good time on the foot. I'm like, what the –
Listen, I tell you what, I look at a parade and get sore.
Yeah, but people don't realize you think riding, it's all, oh. I said, man, I'm glad I didn't have to do back-to-back parades because there's no way I would have last. But, Coach, what is your favorite thing about coming to New Orleans and the carnival season? You've been here long enough now.
Yeah, shoot, you're 14 years now. I'm past the point of people asking me, hey, you like it here? Is this home for you? I mean, I've been here 14 years. And I'm getting ready as I'm driving home to navigate a little traffic. You know, you got to work your way around the route. You get your app on your phone. You see where it's riding. I think the one thing about it, it represents, I don't know if I'm going to say the beginning of spring. That's not always accurate because sometimes it's cold. But, you know, crawfish season's right around the corner. You got the Crescent City Classic that comes up at the end of Lent. And I think that it's the one thing in this city that just it unites this town more than anything else. And, you know, it grows on you. I've ridden, shoot, three different times. If I was going to be in town on Sunday, Zach Streep was just reaching out in regards to riding. And we've got the combine. It's the first time I can recall the combine is going to be during Fat Tuesday. I think that's the first time that's happened to us in 14 years, and that's just the way the calendar worked out this year. But, no, I think it's hard to explain, and I would say this for the people that aren't from here, and that was me at one point. You know, we always from afar looked at Mardi Gras as Fat Tuesday. We thought it was a one-day holiday like Cinco de Mayo, and then you get here and you realize it's much longer than that, and there really is something for everyone parade-wise. And you know, the other thing is, I think the out-of-towners look at Mardi Gras as the parade going right through the middle of the French Quarter. And you know, obviously that's not happening. You know, the route is different than maybe what you would have thought if you didn't live here. And it's much different. And I think, you know, it's the music, it's the food, it's the people. You know, it's you watch two grown men competing like crazy for beads, and then the next day they're like, we got to get rid of these beads. I got bruises on my knee. I almost got in a fight with someone over this one throw. And the next day it's like, all right, let's get these beads out. But it's just something to experience, and anytime I've seen someone experience it for the first time, obviously it's much different and they just go on and on about it. And, you know, the other thing that's unique, and we were able to do this in 09, is you win a Super Bowl, and that was a week prior to Mardi Gras. And like, where else in the country do you have every float ready to put your team on from every different crew, you name it? You know, the kickers were in the Muses shoe.
Right.
It's like everything was ready. Hey, we're going to borrow these floats, bring them back intact a week later. That was something, and obviously uniquely different. But, you know, we do this better than anyone in the world, and it's kind of cool being here.
Sean, Drew announced his decision to return for another season. Was there any doubt on your end that he would not be back for 2020?
Well, honestly, there were some. You know, we spoke a few times right after the season, prior to the Pro Bowl, and then after the Pro Bowl. And I think that, you know, it's a big decision. And I say that, you know, not speaking for Drew, but a lot goes into it. There's a lot of stress on the family. You know, a lot of sacrifices are made to gear up for, you know, what is almost half a year season. So I think to his credit, I know that he spent a lot of time, I'm sure, just knowing Drew, really, you know, weighing all the pros and cons. And, you know, periodically I'd send him a text to just see how he was doing. Look, I'm excited because I know exactly how he played last year, and he's playing at an elite level still. And the one text I said to him, you know, there's 500,000 people that are as talented as you in the business world. And I think Drew's extremely talented that way. You know, there might be 10 people as talented as you if you want to get into TV. All right. And then probably two or three if you want to play quarterback in the world. So,
amen.
You know, it's just, you know, he's done a fantastic job taking care of both mentally and physically, and it's really a credit to him. And so, look, there are a handful of decisions that were predicated on that decision, and that's just how it goes.
Now, Coach Payton, you look, okay, he's back. What kind of contract are you looking from him? Because, you know, team-friendly, you hear all that when you got a seasoned veteran guy like Drew. But what kind of contract? Because you look at the market value, how it goes up, and the salary cap and all that. So what are your expectations as far as in that regard?
Listen, it's a great question, and I think it's your question for Mickey when you have him on the air in the next week.
good answer.
No, I mean, I think, look, I would say this to both Drew and Mickey. You know, here we are however many years, and every time that subject has come up, and it's come up a number of times, in other words, where they're working on a contract, they always seem to get it done in an efficient manner, and I think that that won't be any different this time around.
Now, Sean, is this a Mickey question too? Do you expect to tender Taysom Hill their first round compensation level, considering how much he means to the team and the value? Just, I guess, trying to see his value and him being restricted, how are we in control of that? Do you consider him a first round compensation level?
Well, there's two ways to go about it. Number one, we can sign him to a deal before the league year starts, and you never get to that point. I think if he was unsigned prior to the league year, I would anticipate us really paying close attention to that and looking at that first round tender. Now, I think that'll take some time relative to his contract because it's unique. A, in what he's doing now and what we feel like he can be and what he can do, you know, when Drew does retire. So that will probably take a little bit more work than the contract that Mickey does with Drew. So, but for the fan that's listening, you know, the club that has the RFA player, restricted free agent, or for that matter, the free agent, you know, the one club they can negotiate with prior to the start of the league year is the club that they're just finished playing with.
Now, Coach, when you look at, because it is unique, you look at Taysom Hill and his value, and I think Drew is humble enough. I think y'all got a great offensive meeting room. I mean, you look at yourself, Pete Carmichael, Coach Lombardi, everyone, Drew Brees, Taysom Hill, kind of check the Eagles at the door, and how are you going to contribute for this upcoming season? And I've said this before, less of Drew is more, and I think Drew even realizes that. It's not good for him to throw 40, 50 times, whatever. Could be a case in point that the ebb and flow of a game, let's say you have 65 snaps, that all of a sudden you increase more the opportunity for Taysom Hill simply because what he achieved with the 2019 season or what?
Yeah, I think first off, relative to the room, And, you know, sometimes you're not even aware of it as it's happening. But last year, take last year, for example, I can't recall a room when you look at Drew and Teddy and Taysom and you know, the opportunity for us as coaches to have that type of depth, but also quality, not only players, but, man, fantastic guys. And all three of them are outstanding leaders. And, you know, to see Teddy step in like he did last year and shoot, go 5-0 while he was starting, you know, it just epitomized kind of the type of guys those guys are. And then Drew coming back and winning, Taysom playing. We were very, very fortunate. And probably, you know, you go a whole career and not have that type of quarterback meeting room or depth with guys that can play at such a high level. Moving forward relative to Taysom, you know, there's two ways to think about it. You know, he's certainly someone that we evaluate first and foremost as a quarterback. And then secondly, you know, he did such a good job and has really grown as that F tight end, if you will. He can run. He understands the passing game very, very thoroughly. He's explosive with the ball in his hands. And then, you know, lastly, of course, when he's coming in the game as a changeup, whether Drew's on the field or not on the field at that quarterback position, it really gives you a lot of flexibility. And quite honestly, it's fun to work with because you can think of a lot of different things that can help you relative to that game plan and winning that specific game. So, you know, we're fortunate that way.
Saints head coach Sean Payton here on Sports Talk. And, Coach, I'm sure you'll appreciate this question. What would it take to get from 24 where you are to number one in the draft? And the reason why is because the season that Joe Burrow and LSU had, a lot of fans have asked me that. I don't know. Do you?
Listen, I'll go get fitted for a wedding dress. I watched him play now, and it's what a great year for LSU. I mean, it really an historic year for that team and Coach O and that staff. A fantastic year. I mean, you really couldn't have written a script better. And you know, there's so many players excelled, and you start with the quarterback. It's such a position that's so hard to find. And when you have an opportunity to draft someone of his skill set, first off, you know, history, Cincinnati really hadn't traded a lot to begin with. And there's some real sharp football people there. They're in that position where, you know, I can't speak for how they see Joe or how they see this draft. But certainly the opportunity to draft, look, you had a bad year. All right.
Right.
And so, man, how do you avoid having another bad year? Well, a first step is finding a guy like Joe that can play and play at the level he's capable of playing at. So, you know, just following during the season and watching the success they've had, and then now going through the first draft board meeting, you're able to see the tape. There's going to be a number of those players playing throughout the league, and certainly he's going to be one of them. So, he's going to be a guy that I'm sure a lot of teams will have at the top of their board, certainly at the top of their quarterback board.
Sean, you're part of the competition committee. You think the review of the non-call pass interference plays achieved the desired result, or is there still more work and discussion to be had?
And, Sean, along those lines, how in the hell – okay, listen, this is taking me off. I'm speaking for the fans right now. How in the Vikings game you do not call Kyle Rudolph with offensive pass interference and you're going to call it on George Kittle? Come on.
Well, look, I think one of the things – in these meetings, and we've already had one round of meetings in New York. We'll begin again on Sunday at the Combine. You know, the thing that you hear coach to coach and at the league office and even amongst the officials, and these guys are busting their tail to do a great job for us, is the consistency and the consistency also relative to the replay in New York. So that'll be a challenge for us as a league heading forward. I felt like our meetings, you know, a week and a half ago in New York were very productive. I think that, you know, I think there's still a lot of work to be done. And look, everyone's wanting the same result. Now it's really, you know, rolling up the sleeves and figuring out how do we do this better than a year before and better than, you know, maybe the last 5 years. How do we improve just like we try to do as teams? I think the officiating group in general wants to do the same thing. And that's really, you know, part of it is, hey, you know, when you're struggling on offense or defense or as a team, sometimes you look at, hey, are we asking the players to do too much? And I think we're asking a lot of those officials, you know, in other words, as the rules have changed and also the hit on defenseless players and the, you know, the improper use of a helmet, there's so many different variations now that they're being tasked with on game day. You know, how do we reduce a little bit of what's on their plate to help them with more consistency and to help them do their jobs better? That's really our jobs to begin with. So I know how the committee feels and I know how the league office feels and everyone that's involved in the process of improving just as we would with our teams.
Now, Coach Payton, at this point in the calendar, you know, I'm sure you're used to the routine and what comes about. What would you say is one of the areas you guys might focus on in free agency? I know one thing, this is not changing. Can you stop the run and can you run the football? And I know you always put a strong emphasis in the trenches. To me, that's never going to change. Am I too much a dinosaur when I look at, you know, because, you know, you got all this fantasy football and the skill players and all that. To me, I know you got a fighting chance of you winning in the trenches.
Yeah, I think, Bobby, as long as we're playing tackle football, that's going to hold true. You know, I think you start with your offensive line, and that unit can permeate your team. And so that's always something that we look closely at. The defensive line, I thought, man, we've seen our depth improve there. We've seen a number of players. Ryan's doing a fantastic job with Dennis and those guys of getting fresh bodies in a rotation. And I think that's one of the keys to relative to your personnel to winning football games. And there's nothing worse when you're playing in a game and someone's running the football. And I've never seen it, maybe in Buffalo, the 1 year we played them. You remember, I think we ran it 25 or 26 straight times.
We crushed them. I mean, that was Andrew Speed's best game in the Saints uniform. He was a mauler that game.
Well, and there's nothing more difficult to be on the other side of the sticks when that's happening, you know, and it happened to Green Bay versus San Francisco. I don't know how many times they ran the football. And so it's a tremendous ally for the quarterback and his play. You know, if you're playing good defense and you're able to run the ball, then you've helped your quarterback immensely.
Sean, Alvin Kamara talked about at the Super Bowl that his camp has begun some conversations about a new deal. Is that accurate?
I don't know that. Well, that would be for Mickey. I don't know specifically. Look, we've got a number of young, talented players coming up. They're not necessarily free agents yet. The first item of business for us is really been with, you know, when you get to this stage of the season and you put your musts up there and your needs and your wants, you have to realize you take the magnets off your board that were Andrus Pete and Vaughn Bell and David Onyemata. I'm just hitting a few. I'm sure I'll miss one. Drew Brees, if you're not sure. You know, those magnets are gone when you go through that exercise because technically they're out there in you know, unrestricted land. And so you start closely with your own roster, and then you move on to possibly some targeted players that you feel like would fit here, what we're looking for, and specifically a clean vision as to how we want to play them and how we would use them.
Now, you know, Coach, I'm watching Super Bowl week, and you're doing an interview, and you're doing your responsibilities. And the one thing that caught my attention is that when you look at the Super Bowl contenders. Who was involved? The 49ers and the Chiefs. And you talked about the team speed. Is that, you know, we talked about the trenches, offensive, defensive line. But just elaborate or talk about to the fans about team speed and how you evaluate that considering the level, like a Tyreek Hill, whatever, and even the 49ers, where they're at as far as when you compare the whole league.
Yeah, so when I got down to Miami, I was doing some work with Zebra. Zebra's the company that does the barcode, you know, that's on all our package products at the grocery store. All of us have seen, you know, anytime you're scanning a grocery store item or possibly a ticket or anything that would have a barcode on it, there's a good chance that's a Zebra product. And right. they're also tied and work directly with the NFL. They provide, when we see these next-gen stats that, you know, Alvin Kamara ran 21 miles an hour on that play. That's information gathered from, instead of barcodes, the little chips that are in the quarterback's or in the player's, excuse me, shoulder pads. So Zebra provides that technology, but it also provides us technology to see and study practice workloads, how long guys have been on the field. More importantly, what was their distance traveled, what type of practice they had. You know, for me specifically, it's soft tissue injury prevention, just to pay attention to each player and actually have that data. But it also allows us to scout. It also allows us to look at the other teams, and you could see what personnel, not only personnel, but where these players are aligned. So when I got down to Miami, I met with the Zebra folks and we talked about a few talking points, but one of the topics that came up was, this was a little bit maybe coincidental and partly a big reason maybe why these teams were both in the final game. But what they did a study on is tight end, receiver, and running back. So everyone on offense except the quarterback or the offensive line, and you might call it the offensive skill people if you want to. And so you're combining three position groups here, you know, running back, tight end, and receiver. And those two teams with the Zebra data were the fastest two teams of the 32 teams in the NFL. Now, that's interesting, and it probably hasn't always been the case. You know, generally speaking, you have a team and an identity, and you know how to win, and you win. But when you look at Kansas City, certainly you feel that speed at receiver. I mean, it's when you watch their tape, and we've had some common opponents, and you watch their offense, you see the speed there. And then when you watch the 49ers, their speed at receiver, but then you feel it at the running back position and even the tight end position. Shoot, the tight ends for both teams are guys that can run well and you'd say are in the you know, tops of our league. So it was an interesting side note, you know, as we entered into Super Bowl week, and certainly something that was a good talking point as you're talking to fans about the technology. And it's really just the ability to track and measure, because there's a right. field, you know, every NFL field is kind of marked just like you'd have an invisible fence for your dog. The same thing exists. It's a field that's marked. And so when you enter that field with those chips in your shoulder pad, we're immediately able to track plenty of data. You know, some of it you don't need to use, some of it you want to use. And it's now in the chips are now in the football. I think you're going to see in the next 4 or 5 years, that technology evolved to, you know, punts that go out of bounds, or does the ball cross the goal line, or does the ball get the first down? Some of that, you know, you've done this long enough. You know, think about how nebulous it is when a punter punts the ball out of bounds.
Right.
And then the back judge starts walking up the sidelines, and then either the umpire back there puts his hand up when he feels like he's gotten to, you know, that's probably within 5 to 7 yards accurate.
Yeah, he might be off 5 yards.
Yeah, I mean, easily. He could be off 8 yards. And, well, the technology exists right now where we basically can track that within a yard. And so now it's actually applying the technology, and that's a whole different level. You know, how do we apply it quickly and communicate that so that you get a more accurate spot? And then the same way, you know, when the ball crosses the plane, because we've all seen, you know, the replays of a, you know, a running back. Does he score or does he not score? And you can kind of slow it down, and we all study the knee. We see where the knee's going down. But wouldn't it be kind of neat, just like in the NBA, if you saw the goalposts light up when the ball crosses the plane, and so you see that image, for instance, I'm just using an example.
Right.
You see that image immediately, and now you're looking at the knee, and is it down and there's no light, or is it up? And there, you know, all of a sudden we can be, I think, a lot more accurate with you know, yard to gain or line to gain, whether it's the end zone or for a first down.
Sean, my first opportunity to congratulate you on your recent engagement. So when's the wedding, and me and Bobby invited?
Listen, I'm waiting first to find out your schedule. Diane's promised she was going to send it to me, and then we're going to schedule it when you guys are both out of town.
Well, I can tell. No, Coach, don't worry about Christian. You got to take care of me and JoJo. So I mean,
listen, you guys, we'll take care of all of you. No, I think the plan is a year from now, March, April, in that time frame. But you know, hopefully, we'll narrow down a date and you know, right now you go through the process of wedding planners and all of that. So fortunately, Skyline's pretty good with those meetings. I think it's going to be here in New Orleans.
Now, Coach, you look at the CBA coming about, and Zach's telling me, well, it might happen. It won't be prolonged because dealing with the networks and all that will have a CBA. Because I look at management, I look at players. You can't kill the goose that laid the golden egg. Come on, you got to keep this rolling. So Zach told me, don't be surprised if something doesn't happen soon. But one thing that has been a pet peeve of mine and a thorn in my side, I'm looking at active game day rosters. I mean, how can that not increase? How can you even have inactives? I mean, wouldn't it be better football? You're paying the players anyway. Why not make all those players active? I mean, explain that to me. More jobs, more opportunities.
I think I can help you. Can help you here. So before we get into the roster size, the purpose for inactives are to create a level playing field relative to injuries. So let's say in week three we're playing Atlanta. They're relatively healthy, but we just had three players go down in week two. You know, you don't want to go into the game with one team with all 53 up in the other team. So it gives you that buffer where chances are your injured players are going to fall into your inactive total count. And so currently the rules that we played under last year was 53 on your total team roster. And then you're turning in your inactives that bring you to 46. All right. So each week, seven inactives get turned in. I would say team by team, generally speaking, there's a handful of injured players on that list and then a handful of healthy players on that list. But each team plays then with a healthy 46. I mean, rarely do you get past seven injured players where you have to bring some other people in. There are certainly exceptions. Now, I don't know the specifics, and I'm not in any of these meetings relative to the upcoming CBA. But I know there's been discussion with the game day. First off, the total roster of 53, and then also what you have available on game day. You know, I think take the offensive line. All right, it's a unique position because generally speaking, if everyone's healthy, the same five guys play, and the backups don't play. Now they might play on a certain special team or a jumbo role. But it's the one position where, hey, if everyone stays healthy, your five starters are in. And so it's easy then to dress seven. And I would say throughout the league, there are some teams that dress eight. We've dressed eight before if maybe one or two of the starters might be nicked up. You know, you don't want to get caught shorthanded. But when you have seven and you get a guy injured, now you're down to six and these things happen, and all of a sudden you're down to five. I can recall one time here where, you know, all of a sudden you're thinking, hey, if we get one more offensive lineman injured, we got to play this game here. So it's going to be a tight end going in there, or you're going to be in an unbalance, but it's going to be uncomfortable for a lot of people. All right, starting with the quarterback.
Right.
And so I think that one of the things you could look for is You know, the idea of that game day roster expanding a little bit and one of them having to be an offensive lineman, each team has to bring eight, you know, because eight, you're in pretty good shape. You know, it's hard to get past eight offensive linemen, but, you know, when you look at a college game, it's pretty interesting. And you look at the sidelines, shoot, there's 100, 105. You might have some doubled up numbers, you know.
Right.
There's someone else in a number seven or a number nine. There's someone else in the 24. And then when you look at a pro sideline, when one side of the ball's out on the field, it's kind of like crickets over there. You know, you've got,
right,
you know, and you got to play special teams and you got to. So I think it would be a safe bet that there'll be some changes there relative to health and safety. And that would be something that we would see with the new CBA when that time comes and when they unveil it.
Coach Payne, want to thank you for coming on. I got one more last question because the Hoodat Nation wants to know this. The only problem they have at times, and they respect your genius of calling plays, and I have to deal with it, like, why didn't we run the ball more, damn it? I mean, it's like, why we ran 14 times, 18 times? No, I know you're going 50-50 balance in the ebb and flow of a game, but that I know sometimes you maybe even question, why didn't we run the ball more? But how
Here's
would you explain
happens.
That to the fans? Tell me.
Well, if you take the games where, let's say, the run snaps are less than 20. You know, in
right.
other words,
yeah,
they're
in the teens.
Yeah, you're probably then going to turn on that score sheet, and you're going to see 3 of 11 on third down. You know, in other words, you're not converting the third downs, and so you're not having the snaps that you would otherwise. And if you're converting third downs or you're getting first downs on first or second down, you're going to see your pitch count relative to total snaps in a game be high. But you take the Vikings game, for instance, in the playoffs, shoot, our third down numbers weren't good. Our total play count wasn't good. And because of that, you know, your series that you have aren't as long and your drives aren't as long. And you end up with 16 or 15 rushing attempts. And then it looks even more unbalanced because at the end you're throwing it because you have to. And I completely understand the frustration because look, count me in the middle of that frustration. When you're running the ball now, let's take the other end of it. You have 20, 27, 28, 29, 30 rushing attempts. Then I want to go look at that score sheet and you're going to see 7 for 12 on third down. You're going to see 8 for 11. You're going to see you're staying on the field. You're going to see total snaps. You know, in other words, total play count for you offensively is going to be extremely high. So anytime where we have one of those games where we have 28 or 29 carries or more, you're going to see our number count on offense be real high. You're going to see us in the 70s, and then you're going to see our defense in the 50s. And anytime you see that run total in the teens, you're probably going to see our defense on the field longer than we want and our offense not on the field as long as we want. So, look, that's not just the end-all, be-all, but there's a lot of times it's the byproduct of how that game unfolded. Certainly it's not what you want it to be because you want that balance and you want that ability to control the game on your terms.
Right.
And when we've done that, shoot. And so, look, the fan looks at it and says, every time we run that ball 25 times or more,
we win.
Shoot, we win. Well, I'm with you. I'm with you. I agree. And that's the trick. So clearly that's been, look, for any of our teams that have been really good, and we've had a stretch here with 13 wins, 11 before that, you know, we've had balance. Some games now take on a shape of them, you know, their own. We played Tampa this year with Teddy, and they were a good run defense, and they were committing a lot of guys to the front. And so it was going to be a long day if we just tried to run handoffs and we had to beat them at least earlier in the air and then you're able to rush it later. But oftentimes if you're just looking at rushing attempts, it's a byproduct of what went on in the game. And so the trick is to get that number where you want. And that requires balance, but it also requires staying on the field with third down. It requires that down to be efficient, and obviously the downs prior to put you in the more desirable third down and distances. So we do a ton of studies on that, you know, how we start games in the first quarter, the first half, the opponent we're playing, what we feel like sequence-wise is going to be important. You know, some teams are glaringly, the stat line jumps off the screen. You know, if you're ahead at the halftime against this team, they're 1-18 over the last 5 years, you know, and so you really pay close attention to those analytics that go into it. But I'm just as frustrated as the fan when that happens, and hopefully more times than not, it's not happening.
Saints head coach Sean Payton, thank you so much for carving out some time with us, Coach.
Thanks, Coach. Boy, that was a long-winded interview, but thanks for coming on.
Man, I'm home now.
Yes.
I had to struggle to find a parking spot. I beat someone out real quick here. I've got some king cake inside, and I'm just going to put my feet up. Who rides tonight? This is kind of really the beginning of it, it sounds like.
Nick's rides tonight, Coach.
Carl Nix rides tonight.
Yeah, Carl
the crew of Nix. Coach, enjoy your king cake, all right?
All right, Coach Payton.
We'll see you guys.
All right.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.